Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Joe Sheehan's on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. He of Sports Illustrated and Baseball America. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Well, how you like Kyle Hendricks now, Sheehan?
That was really a fun start. We just don't get a whole lot of these days. 81 pitches. What do you throw? 15 balls out of the entire day. You're just getting all those outs on contact. It looked like a start out of 2016 for him. It was really a lot of fun to watch.
It really did. And you can look at it as outlier as much as anything. It's really quite something. But the strategy that the Cardinals employed against Hendricks did not change all day long. They wanted to be aggressive. They wanted to be aggressive early in counts, and they just never changed. Hendricks seemed to sniff that out, and he pitched to it. That's as much, scouting report and intelligence as anything else. Kyle's, he's got to make the step when teams get swingy at his fastball early to adjust off of it. I just wonder how you look at that in terms of evaluating his stuff and the peripherals around it.
Well, the execution is a big part of it. You talk about the strategy and the approach, but yeah, you have to be able to execute those pitches too. And one of the reasons that, a guy like me is going to be a little bit worried about Hendricks is that you only are dealing with so much when you're talking about a guy throwing 87, 88. You only have so many weapons in your back. And it's not that we dislike guys like Kyle Hendricks. It's just that we know that when we run the numbers, velocity carries the day in Major League Baseball. So, yes, on a given day, a Kyle Hendricks can execute his pitches beautifully, locate, have great movement on the breaking stuff, and throw a shutout. When we talk about, I don't like Kyle Hendricks, I worry about his future, I'm concerned about his projections, none of that says that Kyle Hendricks can't have a day like this. I think we've all got to remember that the top 700 guys in the world playing baseball, all of them are good enough to have a day, a week, a month, a half a season where they pitch at the top of their game, where they hit at the top of their game. I don't want to make it sound like I'm shocked that Kyle Hendricks threw a four-hit shutout the other day. But I don't think it takes away from the fact that on most days, he's not going to be able to do that. He's going to run into teams that he's not going to locate as perfectly as he did on Friday. He's going to be more hittable, and maybe he's going to run into a team that's a little more patient.
The Cubs were bad, and then the Cubs just got good, and they stabilized. They spent yesterday in first place, and I know you took a deep look at what went on in that St. Louis series. What did you see that was telling? What did you see that might portend for better or for ill for this Cubs team?
Well, certainly. I mean, the first week of the season, what was the first thing? They started out 1-6. The rotation the first couple of times through just got locked. And the rotation is stabilized. Hendricks start the other day was an example. If you look at the numbers of the rotation guys, they are second in the National League in getting ground balls. They're third in getting outs in ground balls. So the thing that they're supposed to be doing, which is getting the soft contact, putting the ball on the ground, letting that good infield take care of them, they've actually started doing that. This looks a little bit, it's like the 2016 rotation, maybe just a little bit worse, what you would expect from 3 years of age. But to me, the key for this year was always going to be the offense. Last year was frustrating because that young core drafted and not entirely drafted and developed. Rizzo's one of the guys, but you look at Schwarber, Baez, Contreras, Rizzo, and Bryant. Those five guys really all, other than Baez, went backwards last year. And this year, not just the output numbers, OBP, slugging, home runs, things like that, but if you look at the underlying numbers, they're hitting the ball harder. They're hitting the ball in the air. They've got better barrel rates, which is Statcast looking at and saying, how often are you hitting the ball hard? All of them are hitting better this year than they did, with the exception of Schwarber, and that's a conversation for another day. But Contreras, Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez are the key to this year's team, and they're all hitting better. And to me, that's what they can do. The Cubs get an average rotation, an average bullpen, and the best offense in the league. That's the projection for the Cubs. That's exactly how they played for the last 4 weeks.
Well, I'll get you to the Schwarber River in just a second here. You've been loud a critic as Mike Matheny as anybody.
Well, I'm right here.
And Dan's right there with you. And Mike Schilt is no Matheny. There's no doubt about it. But there were some critical tactical mistakes made by the Cardinals over the weekend, and I wonder if you're starting to look at the way they try to play baseball, how they try and execute their game, and whether that could be a knock against them for the rest of the season.
My argument against Schilt, and I was making this a year ago when the Cardinals were whatever it was, 83-2 after they made the managerial change, was simply that we don't know if Mike Schilt's a good manager yet. And there was this rush because he wasn't Mike Matheny. And simply not being Mike Matheny was going to make you a hero in St. Louis. But when the organization rushed to give him the contract extension, when Cardinals fans were rushing to talk about how great he was and how much better the team was, when you actually dug into the decisions that he'd made, you really didn't see it. When you actually dug into it, you saw that it was really personnel changes and guys like DeJong and Molina getting healthy and active again. Or situations where Dexter Fowler got hurt, so they were basically forced to play Harrison Bader. And Bader, of course, went on to have a great final 2 months. And this year, I think we're seeing it more and more where Schilt's dugout managing, the stuff he does from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., just isn't that strong. I'm not saying he's Matheny. He has benefits. He's done a better job of letting young players play. That's been certainly a part of it. He's a better manager, I think, of the starting rotation, figuring out what to take guys out. But you saw in a situation like Saturday's game, you know, it's 5-1 in the fourth, and you're issuing an intentional walk to bring up the tying run. And you're doing it against a hitter who, in Kyle Schwarber, who even against right-handers, the numbers aren't that great. And, you know, Jeff Sullivan did a great piece at Fangraphs a year ago talking about how Schwarber has struggled his entire career in high leverage situations where he can be pitch chip. That was one of the worst fourth inning intentional walks, 99.9% of the time are bad ideas. This one was even worse than that.
Talking with Joe Sheehan on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. This segment brought to you by Goodwill. Every time you shop at Goodwill, you wield the power to put people to work. Every purchase enables Goodwill to help someone develop a resume, learn interview skills, or get a job. You shop, they train, people work. Visit AmazingGoodwill.com for a Goodwill store near you. I was looking at the numbers for the White Sox, Yoan Moncada, who continues to be productive this year. He's been worth nearly a win per Fangraphs. He's slashing .293, .349, and .526. And if you're just joining us, when I say slashing, that's average on base and slugging. Yet he is another one of these free swingers. And I always get back, Joe, to the things you say about Tim Anderson and what he's capable of doing. These guys with a high strikeout rate who just don't take enough walks. If this is the kind of hitter he's going to be, how many of these guys can be regulars in a lineup on a good team?
I mean, OBP is OBP no matter how you get there, right? You can be a superstar without walking very much. You think about the career that Kirby Puckett had. You think about Ichiro's career. OBP is OBP no matter how you get there. And if you're going to have a 320 OBP, which is a little bit above average in today's game, you can get there with a 300 to 310 batting average. So I think a lineup can have a bunch of these guys. I like to see balance in a lineup. I like to see the guy with 75 walks and a 260 batting average and, you know, this type of player doesn't exist anymore, but the guy who hits .310 with four home runs, that player has basically been chased out of the league. But I think lineup balance is helpful, but in terms of the number of guys you can have, if this is the skill set of your players and they're all going to hit, you know, .290, .320, .450, you know, you can do okay that way. I mean, you'd like to have a little better. I think Moncada is better than that. I think the power in Moncada is really going to play. Anderson, the thing about guys like this is that from year to year, and certainly within a season, the performance is going to vary, right? Batting average is more volatile than skills like walk rate, strikeout rate, and power. So if you're this type of hitter, if you're a hitter who gets most of his value from batting average, the years where you hit .260, .270 are going to hurt the team. And the years where you hit .340 are going to make you, you know, get you MVP votes. So the thing about being a player whose value is built on batting average is just that you're going to be more volatile.
So, Joe, we're looking further and further into the future, I think, for the White Sox. And news that Carlos Rodon may need Tommy John surgery just kicks the ball a little bit further down the line for me. Jose Abreu, though, has been an interesting piece since he was signed to the White Sox. He was once a part of a win-now club. Now he is a can-he-stick-around. His last 10, 12 games have been outstanding. Have you changed at all how you evaluate the right-handed power hitting first baseman, how you've evaluated that profile and how it can age given what the baseball either does or does not do in this version of MLB?
Well, the baseball is a constant for everyone, right? So if I can get this kind of performance from a player I have to extend to 35, I can probably just as easily get it from a 25-year-old. I don't have to pay as much. It's funny because I was on a Braves baseball reference page the other day for reasons I don't even remember. And have we talked enough about how great a signing this turned out to be for Rick Hahn?
That's terrific.
I mean, Abreu kind of had the first big year, and he kind of bounced, you know, slipped a little bit. Like, okay, maybe it was just the one big year. But you look at the 6 years as a group, and he's just been a monster. He's been durable. And again, you know, we talk about, can you build your offense around guys that don't walk? You know, he's not a non-walker. He'll pick up, what, 40 unintentional walks a year. He'll get walked 10, 15 times intentionally on top of that. The power has been a constant. But, you know, Connor, everything we know about aging in today's game tells us that guys like this, and yeah, I talked about this when the Goldschmidt contract came around, it's such a risky bin in which to put your money. And maybe the White Sox can afford it because they're not paying anyone else at this point, and there's not a lot in the free agent market in the next couple of years where you would put that money. So maybe there's an argument that you keep the guy, you dance with the one that brung you, you try to extend Abreu for 3 years at $66 million or something, and you hold on to him. But in general, for most teams, I don't think you want to be putting your money in a 33-year-old first baseman. I think you can find other ways to get that production without assuming the risk.
Joe, I know it's early to do this, but the Cubs have always made it clear that they're never going to stop shopping for high-leverage bullpen arms while they're in their competitive window. The Dodgers are going to be shopping, too. And with the Brandon Morrow uncertainty, it is only increasing some of the intensity of that issue. Who do you like that we've never heard of, who is maybe toiling on a bad team somewhere? Who's somebody throwing 98 that might be available at a reasonable price to bolster a competitive bullpen?
Sorry, guys. I just got caught up remembering the Brandon Morrow uncertainty, which I loved in college. Their second album.
Yeah. It was avant-garde jazz stuff. Yeah, I know.
First album was great. I don't know.
When we talk about relievers, first place I'm going to go, I don't know how obscure it is, but the first place I'm thinking is the Giants. They're not competitive, and they actually have a really good bullpen. Now, some of that is guys they're going to want to hold on to. There's a right-handed named Reyes Moronto, who's probably been their best reliever. But you look at the guys that they've had for a few years, whether it's a Tony Watson, whether it's a Sam Dyson. You know, Mark Melancon only has, I believe, a year and a half left on that, what was a really peculiar contract at the time. They're going to have relievers to move. Again, I don't think they'll move Will Smith or Maranta or Trevor Gott, who they just picked up from the Angels. He's bounced around for a while. He's been a power guy out of their pen. But I look at their bullpen and think, you know, Fonzie is going to really have a lot of cards to play. And that's before you start talking about Madison Bumgarner. He's going to have the relievers to deal at the deadline. Elsewhere, Miguel Castro, a power arm with the Orioles. He might go. Michael Givens is their closer. He's almost certainly not going to be there on August 1st. Because he's on a bad team, he doesn't get a lot of people haven't really thought about him as a top-tier closer. Remember, they had Zach Britton until the middle of last year. But I think Givens is a guy who, on a better team, steps in as like the second or third right-hander and can really help. You know, I would compare him, and this may be a little generous, to Pedro Strop in the Cubs bullpen.
That's not a bad comp.
No, I'd be all right with it as long as he's not pitching like Pedro did last night. Joe, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Joe Sheehan, and the Midday Midway comes your way next. It's happening again.
What?
We've had a spate of issues with zookeepers not understanding a fundamental element of zookeeping.
I feel like we need to call the zookeepers union.
Yes, we need to. There's some remedial zookeeping lessons, and I've got another story that coincidentally takes place at a zoo, but it creates an existential question that I will ask you. Would you do this to get that?
We've got a Florida story. The rules to a classic game have changed, and not for the better. Plus, I found a product that may help your softball game as the season begins. The Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One
2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
It's Midday Midway time. We started out the show by talking a great deal of baseball in depth, and I found it interesting that both the Cubs and the Bears are currently realizing that the limiting factor in their championship success might be an end-of-game specialist with a high degree of variance. And it's something that both have to find in their own way. The Bears going about it oddly, almost comically, self-aware comedy in this case. The I think David Hogg called it the theater of the absurd.
Yeah.
It is indeed that, and they seem to be embracing it, but I think the Cubs also understand that they need to build in another four outs at the back of that bullpen, as evinced last night by a game they should not have lost, but indeed they did. Joe Sheehan talked baseball as well.
So softball season is either here for a lot of us or just about to start. Need some of the rain to get out of the system here, but it's on the way. I played a little bit on Sunday, a doubleheader. It was a good day. But I found a product that greatly enriched my experience. I want to know if you've heard of this or if any of our listeners have partaken in this. Had a buddy of mine, Zach, and you know, we're all playing the outfield together, and he's got the tin. You know, the tin of chaw. And he's like, hey, do you want any of this?
No.
And immediately I'm like, no, I don't want anything to do with that. Get that away from me. I tried that in college. It's just instant nonsense. I don't want anything to do with it.
I had a tin like that that contained shredded beef jerky.
This was not a tin of chaw. It was a tin of coffee pouches.
Oh, like Skull Bandits, but with coffee?
Yeah, they were just like little, cloth. I guess they were cloth packets that you shove in your lip like dip, and then you just got this. You know, you give it a little press, give it a little hey, how's your father throughout the game, and you get a little. It tasted like, the Werther's Originals hard candies,
sure,
like those, but coffee flavored. It was that exact flavor.
That's not unpleasant.
Gave you a little juice all the way through the game, all the way through the morning. It was very nice, and I had one of these. It was very, very lovely. Got you all the way through. And I started thinking about all these baseball players who have gotten themselves onto some of the coffee dips. But invariably, it never stops at the coffee. They either are mixing the coffee with the tobacco, or they go back to the tobacco completely, or they start wrapping the tobacco in bubble gum and shoving that down in there. That. And I don't think I'm on the slippery slope or anything, but this was a nice little bump for my morning.
Yeah, the idea is to turn it the other way. The idea is to use the coffee dips to wean you off the stuff, but if it's a thing where you just kind of like to have a little buzz going.
It helped. Wonder if you've tried to get in there.
Several texters are weighing in saying it's called Grinds. Grinds coffee pouches.
I did not catch the brand.
Grinds. Terry and I years ago opened the basketball re-education facility. It's in an undisclosed area of Quebec because that's just where we ended up placing it.
And what was the purpose?
To make people less basketball stupid.
Okay.
I'm considering adding an annex to it for zookeeper retraining and re-education. A young zookeeper is expected to make a full recovery after being mauled by two lions at the Serengeti Zoo. Reports indicate the man entered the enclosure at feeding time.
Oh, God.
The lions had been, stay with me here, released from their cages to feed on meat, which had been left for them in the center of a large enclosure.
Come on.
The boss of the zoo told reporters, "It's a miracle that our young colleague is still alive." His colleagues told the paper here, the DPA, that they were unsure why the 24-year-old man entered the enclosure. They speculated it could have been to perform a routine fence check. I would imagine the time to do that would be at a time other than the large amount of meat has been placed as they are removed from their cages. So once they noticed the man, the two male lions pounced, attacking him in his arm, leg, and chest. Zookeepers were able to fight off the lions in order to save the man. He was later flown in an emergency helicopter to a nearby hospital. He is in stable condition after undergoing a five-hour operation. A spokesperson for the zoo later said the man forgot the golden rule. What do you think the golden rule of zookeeping is?
Don't go in during death time.
Treat every gun as if it were loaded at all times. No,
come
it
on.
Is. It is. check to see if the lions are in their cages before entering the enclosure. Here endeth the lesson.
My God. It might have been for a routine fence check. Yeah, okay, so that's the meat. Hey, Phil, you've got the routine fence check today. Just as a reminder, don't go in there when the big furry things with knives as teeth are eating their food.
Out of their cages.
Don't go in there then. Don't do that.
Let me write that down. All right,
Phil,
gotcha.
Are you listening?
Yeah.
No.
No, he's on his phone playing Fortnite Mobile.
Idiot. Are you a, or have you ever been a game-playing family? You know, board games, card games, that kind of thing. You guys do like a game night or anything?
Sure. We used to play Sorry all the time. We could get all four of us in the same room for enough
Sorry's
time.
Sorry's a good one. You gotta have, like, if you're going to do the game nights, you got to find those games that aren't Monopoly. Like, there's time and a place for, like, Monopoly or Risk, but it always ends in swearing at grandma and throwing a table over and fighting and yelling and screaming and lessons about being a slumlord. That's how I learned how the rent control structure works in America. However, this is news for Uno playing families or groups of friends. Like if you're out at Guthrie's or something like that and sitting down to a game of Uno. Did you know that a very popular strategy in an old school, and Uno's coming back competitively, by the way. Have you seen the kids playing Uno?
Competitive Uno?
No, it's coming back. I don't know if your kids are into this, but in some of the high schools, my mom teaches, Uno is like a thing.
Really?
Yeah, the kids are like, they're playing for lunch money, pink slips, the whole thing. It's hardcore. There is now a new strategy in Uno that is illegal. You know, you got the draw four card.
Yeah.
You cannot play the draw two right after. Stacking the draws and just like beating
just
the
like
hell.
Burying somebody.
Just burying somebody under a tumult of cards. You can't.
Was
do
there
this.
Like a Joe Cowley out there who was somehow gaming an Uno glitch to do this?
Uno tweeted it because
they
that's how
rules
up this game has been. That's how big Uno has been over the last like year or so.
I had
no idea myself. They tweeted, if someone puts down a plus four, you got a draw. Your turn is skipped. You cannot put down the plus two to make the next person draw six. We know you've tried it. That strategy is no longer legal. And I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know how the Uno strategy works now when I'm out at Guthrie's. I don't know how to change this. Please help.
A wild raccoon has moved into Heidelberg Zoo in Germany, and keepers can't kick him out. German daily Rhein-Neckar Zeitung reported Friday that zoo staff recently discovered the uninvited guest inside the raccoon enclosure, where he seemed to be getting along fine with the seven original residents.
Okay.
So this raccoon just got in, like, hey, you mind if I
hang out?
Like,
hang out.
Come on in.
Big gulps, huh?
The interloper has been nicknamed Fred. He can expect
a German raccoon named Fred.
The German raccoon has been named Fred, and he can expect free board and lodgings for life because European Union rules forbid him from being released back into the wild. He's granted asylum. Now, under a 2015 EU directive, raccoons are considered an invasive alien species that might pose a threat to European plants and animals. Wild raccoons in Europe are the descendants of animals that escaped from fur farms decades ago. Okay, now this is the kicker here. Fred is unlikely to produce offspring because European Union rules dictate he'll have to be castrated.
If he's caught?
No. Now, because he's in the zoo, this is the question for you. If, instead of leading a life of uncertainty in the wild, if you could be guaranteed a piece of cake life from here on in and all the food you need and your friends and perhaps happiness in the enclosure, you are giving up a little bit of freedom, but by your own choice. Fred went there. Fred was not captured.
He knew what he was
Fred
getting into.
Fred showed up and moved
I'd
in.
I'd say the hell with
and
him.
And say, look, you can stay, but we got to cut your balls off.
Is it? Do we know it's the cutting? It's not the chemical?
Oh, I don't know if it's chemical
it's
castration.
It's got to be the cutting.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to be the guy to do it. Steve, go do Fred. Yeah.
The next story we're going to have is man eaten alive by raccoon in German zoo when he's trying to cut his balls.
Chemical Castration, their third album was so good.
It was after their second guitarist died and they replaced him with the super shreddy guy. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't want to admit that it was an upgrade, but
we know.
This story from Florida, because it's amazing. Gary Wayne Anderson, 68 years old, crashed into a police cruiser.
His middle name is Wayne, too.
Crashed into a police cruiser outside Rodriguez Fashion about 7 p.m. while a Haines City police officer was away from the car. Anderson acknowledged hitting the cruiser, but offered an excuse of being drunk and said there was no damage to the car, according to a release from police. He then failed the sobriety test and was taken to Haines City Police Department. At the department, Anderson told officers he had been poisoned by the police and demanded to be taken to the hospital. At the hospital, his blood alcohol level was
19.
0.241.
Okay.
More than three times the legal limit of 0.08. That is quite a thing. His mood, predictably, shifted from laughing to aggressive. Now, here's the best part. This man did not crash into the police cruiser in his own car. He didn't fall into the thing. No, no. He had driven to Rodriguez Fashion on his lawnmower and crashed yes. into the police cruiser on his riding lawnmower while holding a 0.241 BAC. Gary Wayne Anderson is now locked up, and it's going to take him a little bit to get out.
The Midday Midway at the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. You mentioned this story before. It was an odd occurrence at a baseball stadium. It happened in Cincinnati, and you are not going to believe the details of this. You couldn't write this any better than Trent Rosecrans did for The Athletic. And describing a scene, we've seen it before, but I don't know that we've quite seen the outcome.
No.
This is an on-brand baseball story coming your way next. You won't want to miss it. Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What the f*** am I doing? I'm covered in bees!
Well, a lot of people were, some actually by choice, as it turns out. This segment's brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com, the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I would go so far as to say there's never been a strange baseball story more catered to Dan Bernstein than this.
I'm just intrigued by a lot of this stuff. And this happens. It happens either at a minor league game or a major league game seemingly every year when you get a swarm of bees. And apparently it happens when a queen leaves a hive to go start a new hive. And then the new queen is born. The colony will all protect the queen and swarm to the queen and start creating the colony wherever that new queen may be. And that's what happened in Cincinnati at the Great American Ballpark. It was right before the game, and the umpire crew is getting together, and then they realized there was a swarm of bees that was hitting the field, so they delayed the game. So it was they decided to take 18 minutes to figure out what to do. So what do you do, right?
You have no idea what you do.
Generally, what they do is they call somebody whose job it is to either – they don't like to exterminate bees because bees are incredibly valuable.
We're losing them, right? I mean,
well,
the
I think they bounce back
thing?
A little bit.
Oh, we're bouncing back?
And I was reading actually a national –
upstroke for bees? The exit velocity on bees is good now?
Launch angle, yeah.
Launch angle.
I was reading a National Geographic article that bees are being stolen in California where they – bee – wranglers, not just keepers, but they travel.
Well, these are bee rustlers then.
Well, there have been. It's no joke. No joke. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of bees have been stolen because they go out to pollinate the almond crops, and there's a ton of money. There's whole towns that spring up overnight with people just bringing their bees to market to be used, to be rented out as pollinators.
Seriously?
And then the honey is just a byproduct.
No idea.
And people are stealing whole colonies of bees. So there are people out there. But here's what's incredible. There was a beekeeper that happened to be at the game. As this is going on, Jonathan Beers of Montgomery, who's been keeping bees for 50 years, he was walking in the gates toward his seats in section 112.
Come on.
He heard what was happening, and he volunteered his services. Guess who else was there? Another beekeeper. Dirk Morgan. Dirk Morgan was in the owner's box as a guest of Bob Castellini Jr.
What?
He himself is a beekeeper. And he went down. He left the box and he went down to lend a hand as well.
This is like the Seinfeld bit with Costanzo.
Is anyone here a marine biologist?
It's amazing.
Not one, but two experienced beekeepers happened to be there.
Is anyone here a beekeeper? Now, one inexperienced beekeeper was, I saw this on video, and it was all pregame too, so there's nobody was talking or sitting down about this. It's just all a bunch of B-roll. Derek Dietrich, you know, large, muscular man for the Reds.
He shouldn't have been doing what he does. I know he was just joking around and screwing around, pretending to be dressed as a beekeeper, but he was told that that's like the last thing you want to do.
Well, of course, that's what Derek Dietrich would be up to. You saw him over the weekend. Derek Dietrich is the guy that, with eyeblack, painted a mustache on his face, a big...
an old-fashioned.
Yeah, an old-fashioned with the hang-downs on either side, and played the entire game with a mustache painted on his face.
So both Beers and Morgan had the same solution. Find the queen and get a box. By the time both of them had found the Great American Ballpark officials, the game had started. It was an official delay of 18 minutes. Beers continued throughout the game to wrangle the bees into a box that originally housed 18 Joey Votto bobbleheads. Which I don't know why that makes it even better, but it does.
Here's why. It's because now you have a direct conversion rate for bees to Joey Votto bobbleheads.
Okay, but wait till you find out. I want you to picture this decent-sized box here, and I want you to think about how many bees and how much the box weighed by the time they got done. So they took the box that once housed 18 Joey Votto bobbleheads. It was given a new top made out of another box, taped shut, and had a door cut into it and holes poked into it with a screwdriver. The bees settled onto a chair behind section 119, directly behind the Giants' dugout.
Good seats.
So Beers and Morgan shook the swarm of bees off the chair and into the box, hoping to get the queen inside the box.
I feel like we've skipped through with just that. You kind of yada-yadded how they did it. They shook them?
Just wait. The other bees would follow the queen. The veteran beekeepers, they knew how the swarm happens. They knew if they got the queen in the box, all the other bees would follow on their own volition. These two had never met before. They traded phone numbers, bonding over their common interests.
Fell in love.
Now, the swarm is docile. They only want to find the queen. And this had something similar had happened in 1976 at Riverfront Stadium. So we've got a comp here. Before a game against the Giants, several fans and Giants players were stung, and it resulted in a 35-minute delay because a Reds employee tried to spray the bees. So these guys understood, do not do that.
Should I check the B-Ref page for the bees?
So Beers wearing no...
Thanks, Kawhi.
Yeah, wearing no protective gear, used a paintbrush to push the bees congregated around the opening of the box inside. Ushers blocked off the area from fans. And some players were watching them do this. And as this happened, he was able, they have a picture of Beers and the box here. They ended up getting the majority of the bees into the box. It was filled with approximately 10 pounds of bees.
10 pounds?
10.
How many bees are we talking?
They estimated the 10 pounds of bees were composed of 50,000 to 75,000 bees.
So that's your conversion rate. It's about 60,000 bees to 18 Joey Votto bobbleheads. That's your conversion rate.
That's about how it works out.
I love this
18 Joey Votto bobbleheads equals 10 pounds or, say, 60,000 bees. And they took care of everything. They're not even going to bill the Reds for it. That Beers and Morgan said they happened to be in the crowd. They were happy to do it. And Beers said if someone alerts him to a swarm and he takes care of it, he'll thank them with a jar of honey from the hive. They are going to bring them back to a hive, and he's going to deliver a jar of honey to Great American Ballpark later this season. So maybe they'll have some kind of limited edition concession with actual Great American Ballpark bee honey.
So did they know that the swarm was docile? Is that something you can put on the Jumbotron in Cincinnati?
No worries.
The swarm is docile.
But how about it? I'm a beekeeper. But wait, I am also a beekeeper. They combine their forces to keep the bees.
How many beekeepers are in a major league ballpark at any one time? Like, what are the number of beekeepers to people in the United States? Like, if you've got a packed house at Wrigley or on the south side at Guaranteed Rate, are you guaranteed to have at least one beekeeper there? I don't know how many beekeepers are in this country.
You know who does it, actually? I want to say an absolutely amazing human being who used to engineer Score broadcasts. A guy named Greg Lane. Do you remember Greg?
Yeah.
Super smart, super nice, genuine Renaissance man. Like, the guy is a fascinating person who does like Lake Michigan free diving, and he's a editor of a literary journal.
Of course.
A brilliant guy.
He fights.
He's one of those guys where I saw somebody called him at one point when there was a similar situation on the South Side. And I have seen this. I saw this along the Namekagon River when I was chaperoning. I was a camp counselor with a bunch of 10-year-olds and terrified of it. And someone was standing right by one of these swarms of bees. And the person actually told me that at the time, said, don't worry, don't disturb it. You can come really close and watch it, because all they're doing is swarming around the queen. The last thing they want to do is sting anybody.
I don't know that I could tell myself that loud enough in my brain to go into the swarm to try and shake the queen into a box.
Yeah, that's pretty ballsy.
I don't have that in me. I don't have that kind of steel.
That's like the Fangraphs John Lester comp of the bear that won't eat you. When John Lester's staring at you, it's like he's not thrown over.
He's not doing it.
It's like, go ahead, go sit at the picnic table.
Go to second.
Go sit next to that bear. I promise you the bear won't eat you. Yeah, it's hard to overcome sort of these innate things.
I'm not going to that picnic table. It's not happening.
But I don't know how you know if you get the queen other than results. Because when the swarm is like that, it's not like you can identify an individual bee. It's not like she's bedecked in flowing robes, you know?
She's wearing the crown jewels today. So that was lucky for us. She was really kind of decked out. How do you know if you get the... She's not just larger?
And the queen is getting larger. No, I don't know. At any game, if there are 125,000 beekeepers in the U.S. comes to us no less a source than honey.com. Not honey.com. That's different. Maybe it's pronounced comb. So at the at the average Cubs or White Sox game, is there a beekeeper there?
I don't know. Well, you got to think the distribution, too. Like, in a crunchy spot like Oakland or maybe San Francisco, you're more likely to have a beekeeper. The fact that you're in the middle of the country, Cincinnati.
No. I've been to farmers markets. The farmers market over in Logan Square, there was Chicago honey there. Like, downtown, like South Side, West Side, there were people with rooftop bees. And they're feeding on clover and everything in the city of Chicago.
We've got local honey.
The honey tastes like bullets. It was local honey, and so I know there are beekeepers here.
Guys, my friend Carly from college is in Naperville. She's a beekeeper. Do you know her?
Do
you know my friend Carly from college? She's a beekeeper in Naperville.
How are we supposed to know her?
How would we possibly know her?
I also want to know what makes Southside honey different. Does it have like jardinera in it or something?
That's exactly right. It's better that way.
We only put mustard on this honey.
Deep dish.
And did Wes date one of the Southside honeys?
Yeah, Kawhi is Wes. Kawhi that name.
Well, that was I haven't been at a baseball game where it's happened anywhere. You know, I was at a minor league game where there was a hornet's nest that had to be, but that you don't screw around.
No,
the
swarm is not docile.
Down. No,
the hornet swarm kills.
Yeah, hornets are just bad things that you burn with fire and step on and hear them scream and do awful things. Bees are good guys.
It was kind of an amazing baseball thing that happened in this game too. Pablo Sandoval, the Kung Fu Panda, everyone's favorite, pitched a clean inning. Hit a home run, stole a base.
What?
Yeah.
It's the last one, I don't believe.
Pablo Sandoval stole a base.
That's awesome.
Hit a dinger, pitched an inning, clean.
And we've heard that in spring training, there's a bee game. This was a bee game.
Oh. Yeah. It's Kawhi, too.
Chris Herring knows everything about the NBA. We have all kinds of exciting playoff stuff going on. The Houston Rockets shot 50 threes last night.
50. If it was one.
It was 50, and it was enough for them to even their series 2-2. There's Giannis Antetokounmpo, absolutely unstoppable in the fourth quarter.
He's a golden god.
They took what appears to be an insurmountable 3-1 lead over a demoralized Celtics team. Chris Herring of 538 is going to tell all next on The Score.
For all station contest rules, go to 670thescore.com/rules. It's Ravinia Summer. Tickets to all May, June, and July shows are on sale now. Don't miss performances by Counting Crows, John Prine, Buddy Guy, Lyle Lovett, Rob Thomas, Steve Miller Band, and more. Get tickets only at Ravinia.org.
You still screwing around spending way too much money on over-designed razors and razor blades with a lot of silly bells and whistles that are just designed to separate you from your money? Don't be victimized and go to Harry's.com and get all the essentials and shave better and much, much less expensively. Right now with the code Chicago at Harry's.com, you can get a 5-blade razor, the weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for just $3, and it ships for free. The founders of Harry's were a couple of guys who were tired of all the overpriced gimmicks, as I was and as you probably are. The flex balls and the vibrating heads and the spaceships you hold in your hand. You don't need any of that. They own their own world-class factory in Germany that's been perfecting the art of razor blades for almost a century. Blades that have received over 20,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot and Google. 100% quality guarantee. And the most important thing is this $3 trial set. And it ships for free. You get it from Harry's with the code Chicago at Harry's.com. The razor, the weighted handle, the foaming shave gel, and the travel cover, $3. Go to Harry's.com and at checkout, use the code Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.